Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition, too small in a good way.
Well, Manton, I have had a very productive week. I finally decided that this would be a good time to send all my tax information in for 2013. So I'm really keeping up with it. I'm a full 3 weeks ahead of October 15th, which is the deadline for late extended filing.
There you go.
I'm just terrible about this stuff. But I did achieve something else in the past week, which is I got a fancy new phone. So I'm towing the Apple fanboy line properly and fulfilling all my obligations as a brainwashed member of the six-color cult. How about you, Manton? Where's your phone? Do you show your Apple pride when you leave the door, or what? Are you ashamed?
I have one color. I have a blue iPhone 5C. I do not have. I'm gonna skip the six. I mentioned this before. I played with the six regular in the store. I haven't seen a plus in the wild yet. Although I hope to maybe head to the Apple store this week and play with one. But no, I'm sitting this one out. It's too big. It's too big. I'm happy with my phone.
Yeah. Well, it's too big, but if you keep saying that, then you may never get another iPhone again.
So I was thinking about that, and I want to ask what you think of that, but of your phone and if it's too big. But I think that I think Apple will do another 4-inch phone. I think what could happen is, you have this right now, you have the 5C at the low end, the 5S in the middle, and then you've got the 6 and the 6 Plus. And I could see them doing – so next year you can imagine they have a 6S and a 6S Plus. I could see them doing a 6C at the low end next year that's kind of like a 5S that's still 4-inch, and then have the like three sizes, and you have the sort of cheaper low-end one that still gets upgrades. Maybe it lags behind a little bit. Because the larger phone is easier to do some things in, right? And then the technology gets better and smaller, and then the year following you have a smaller. I think that I'm holding out hope. I think they may do another 4-inch, and that's the one I'm going to get.
Here's the problem, Manton. I'm sitting here. I'm such a little jerk, right? I'm like, I hate my new phone. I hate my fanciest phone in the world. I got a new phone, and I spent hundreds of dollars on it, and I hate it because it's a little bit bigger. And the truth is, though, I was struck when I got it. I opened it up and I was like, oh, God, this is it's all coming true. It is too big. My hands are too small. I'm not a giant person. I'm just an average everyday person with smaller than average, perhaps, hands. And I'm holding my iPhone 5 and it feels perfect. And I get the iPhone 6 out and it's like I got this giant chalkboard of a thing in my hands. And I'm afraid I'm going to drop it. And of course, it's brand new, so I don't want to damage it. And damn it, Manton, now I'm sitting here talking to you, and I've been using my iPhone 6 for only a few days. I got it on Friday, like most early adopters did, and we're recording this on Tuesday, and I'm looking at my iPhone 5, and the darn thing seems small now.
Right.
It really seems possibly too small, and right. I don't know what happened to me. I don't know how they brainwashed me, but I'm looking at both phones. I got my iPhone 6 here. Darn it, it does seem big still, but it seems possibly not too big.
Right, you get used to it, right? Yeah. But that doesn't mean that the thing that looks too small now is bad or is too small in a bad way.
Yeah.
Like it might be too small in a good way. Like I used my 4S for the first time a couple of weeks ago in a long time. And, charge it up and boot it up, and I need to test on it or do something with it. And it seems so small. But then I actually played with it for a few minutes, and I kind of just got used to it again, and it kind of reminded me of what I loved about that phone. Yes, it feels too small, but it was really great. And if I had to use it every day, it wouldn't feel too small. It would feel perfect. The thing that I was thinking about that struck me, okay, a couple days ago, I took my daughters to see a concert, and we went down to San Antonio for the boy band fans in the audience. It was One Direction, and I'm not ashamed to admit, I took them. It was fun. They had an amazing time, and I'm there with a handful of other dads and 50 thousand screaming fans, right? And everyone has an iPhone or another kind of phone, and they all are filming, they're taking pictures, they're using it instead of a lighter because no one has a lighter anymore. And I started to think, like, what if all these people have like a 6 Plus instead? It'd be terrible. You couldn't hold it in one hand. You'd be blocking people's view. It would be almost as comical as holding up an iPad, right? And so I think there are places that it's still useful to have a phone that's smallish size.
Yes.
And a kid's, right? Like all these tens of thousands of kids, you talked about small hands. I mean, I don't know. I think I could really see Apple, they push the, you know, the new technology and the new screens and the new camera and stuff and the bigger phones, but they still keep having a smaller phone that they rev, because having a computer and a big screen in your pocket or that you can take with you is great, but there's also a use case for a smaller phone, like a normal sized one.
I think you're right. I just wonder if that use is mainstream enough for Apple to care any longer about it. And, you know, the things I love about the smaller phone are I can hold it with such a confident grip with one hand that I'm really, really sure it's not going anywhere, even as I, you know, use it one-handedly. I'm starting already to get more and more confident with the iPhone 6. I think maybe that will feel as confident as time goes on. What I really miss is, here's what I keep worrying about now is that I'm going to like break the phone in my pocket somehow by like stepping, like, you know, for anybody who is kind of active, like, you know, I like to, you know, sometimes run up the stairs or whatever, you know, I do things that are, or like even just, you know, rolling around on the floor with my kids, right? It's like with the iPhone 5 in my pocket, there's less chance of it sort of pressing up against the floor in like a wide enough way to get like bent or cracked, I think. That's how I feel. So that's the main thing I miss. But to be honest, it's starting to fade away, that concern. And I think maybe it's sort of like a fault of people in general that we're so easily annoyed by change. I think maybe we've talked about this before, even Manton, but like, you know how it, like, if you are a person, let's just say hypothetically, Manton, that you're a person who mainly just wears like shorts and a t-shirt and sandals every day, right? And then like you have to wear a suit.
Right.
And you're like, oh, this thing's choking me. Like, you have to not only wear a suit, but like a suit with a shirt and a tie. It's like, and ties like feels like it's strangling you. And that's how it feels when you are a person who normally wears a t-shirt and sandals every day.
Right.
But when you're a person who goes to Wall Street every day, that feels like, you know, the perfect fit. It's like, that's what you probably feel naked if you're wearing a t-shirt and sandals.
Right. Yeah.
And so suddenly you take one person out of the environment they're used to and you put them in a new environment and everything seems wrong for a little while. And I think that's what it is. When it comes down to it, I think I'm as much of a part of the problem as anybody else. But I think a lot of this screaming about the size, it really doesn't matter that much. Like, it's really just who cares? It's really like, is the, you know, is the shirt going to bother you? Yes, for the first day or two, and then you'll get used to it.
Right. Yeah. And that, I mean, and I think my initial reaction is definitely the, you know, I fear change, but I have a whole series of, I think, good arguments against the bigger size as well to back that up. But part of it is like, just to keep with your analogy, like I don't wear a suit every day. In fact, not even once a year usually, right? And if I have a choice, same thing with a phone, I would prefer, just like I prefer to wear sandals, I prefer to have the smaller phone. And I think Apple should, I think there are a lot of people that fall into that category, definitely kids, I think. And, you know, I think they should accommodate everyone. They do right now because they have, you know, two out of their four phones in the lineup are smallish. And I think they'll rev those. I think they'll continue to do those. And for people who want the bigger screen, great. For people who want the super big one, excellent. I don't want the Plus, but I'm also kind of jealous of people that have the Plus, and because it is super awesome in terms of if you're on the road and, you know, or you're traveling or you're at a coffee shop or something. I mean, having something almost as big and functional as an iPad is really cool.
Yeah.
It is really neat. But I don't want that every day. Just like I prefer to wear sandals every day.
That makes sense. And I've been fascinated, frankly, to learn how many people have bought iPhone 6 Pluses. And then on top of that, how many people have bought them, claim to have gotten used to them the way that I'm claiming, you know, you can get used to a suit.
Yeah.
But in honesty, I don't think I can get used to an iPhone 6 Plus. So that's why I bought the 6. But I'm impressed how many people do claim to have gotten used to it already and are enjoying it and loving it. And it just goes to show, boy, you can't assume that everybody's going to have the same impression of something.
Right. Well, and the market is so ginormous now for the iPhone. It just makes sense to have several sizes.
Yep.
You know, it's just, you're not going to make everybody happy with one size.
And I think it's exciting for Apple that they have this they're now in this market where previously only mainly Android phones possessed it, right? This bigger phone market. People have been saying, no, seriously, if Apple makes these bigger phones, they're going to sell a ton of these phones. And I think that's already panning out. They sold 10 million phones in the first weekend.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, it's not only sort of respectful of Apple to appreciate people who just genuinely prefer smaller phones, but to this day now, Apple owns that small phone market as far as, like, you know, nobody makes a good historically the thing was, like, people said, well, Android phone makers are only making big phones because, like, they can't get enough battery life out of a small phone or this, that, and the other thing. And I think that there was some truth to that, and they were, like, making big phones because they had to, and then, well, lo and behold, people liked big phones. But as far as the small phone niche, I don't think anybody can really take that away from Apple. Like, Apple has the engineering manufacturing prowess to make these small phones as capable as they are. So maybe that's a competitive advantage they can continue to milk. I guess it depends how much the watch ends up being the focus for Apple of the small form factor.
Yeah, that's a great point. No, I think you're right, though. They should use this opportunity over the next year or two to just keep hold of that smaller phone market. And, you know, there's no reason why they shouldn't have the best 4-inch phone of anybody out there for the folks that want it. And maybe that's going forward in a couple of years, maybe only 25%, you know, or 30 or 40, maybe it's less than half people prefer the smaller phone, but that's still millions of people and it's still worth doing. That's a good point about the watch, though. I don't know. It could change everything, or it could just be for the first year or so, it could be just something that, you know, just very, very few people, like in terms of the mainstream, are going to have enough that it changes, like, the type of phone that you would want. I don't know. I have trouble. I can see, you know, you have an iPhone 6 Plus and you don't want to take it out of your pocket because it's too tight, or it's, you know, it's in your purse or something like that. I can see the watch being super useful and almost a requirement for some use cases, but I don't know if that changes the actual type of phone you would buy or not.
Yeah. Well, here's one more thought that is going to make it. This is a positive thought for those optimistic about future 4-inch phones. One is, there's no doubt Apple has the capability to make 4-inch phones, and there's nothing new about, as far as I can tell, for example, there's nothing new about the iPhone 6 line that would outright prevent them making a 4-inch phone that was in the same sort of modern, mold of that. So they have at their disposal the ability to make 4-inch phones. They may even think that making 4-inch phones is a good idea in the long term. But let's say that they had a 4-inch phone designed and ready to go. And we start with the premise that, like, they're ready to make, you know, September 2014 is take back the big phones from Android month. It would be super confusing and bad for marketing if Apple were to come out, I think, today, you know, on the same day with iPhone 6 Plus, iPhone 6, and iPhone 6 4-inch edition. It's already people are already having a hard enough time choosing between the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus. I've seen lots of people on Twitter saying, like, I just can't decide. I can't decide. I'm not going to buy until I can go to the store, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's some of them are even saying, I'm just going to hold out. I can't decide, so I'm just going to hold out. Now, if you add one more phone size into the mix and they all seem brand new and they all seem exciting, then it's going to make it even harder for people to decide. They'll get that choice paralysis where they won't buy anything.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Maybe now, you know, maybe every other year will be like in the optimism department. Maybe next September 2015 is about like showing the world they still got smoke when it comes to, you know, to the 4-inch factor. And they say, and then they make this 4-inch phone look like the most exciting new thing in the world. So there's no choice paralysis for people who are excited about getting the latest new thing, but there's still the big phones hanging out for people who want that.
Yeah. I think every 2 years would be perfect for revving the smaller version. I think that would totally work. And again, like if they did it on the off years, like the C or the S years, they rev the smaller phone. I think that would be perfect. But I don't think that the smaller phone will ever be, it'll never have the latest and greatest again. Like the best camera is always going to be in the big phone now. The best battery is always going to be the big phone. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Right. That's the way it is today. I'm with the Plus. I mean, the Plus has better camera than the 6, even though the 6 is way better. Right. Yep. So it'll continue to be that way. That's fine. But they can still rev that smaller phone every couple of years. It'll get Touch ID. It'll get NFC. It'll get, you know, some of these other things. If you want the latest and greatest, your phone's going to be bigger. But if you're happy with upgrading every couple of years, every 3 years, you're not totally left behind on the smaller line. Who knows? Maybe they won't do that. But that makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, it's like MacBook Pros, right? Like, there's certain features or, you know, certain power and stuff you never get in the 13-inch model, right? It was like 13-inch, yeah, you can get this, that, the other thing. I don't have the numbers at hand, so excuse me, astute listener who wants to criticize me for not being prepared. This is my take in the past has been, you know, yes, you can get the 13-inch MacBook Pro, but maybe it's never going to be as fast as the top of the line 15 or 17 inch one. I think that's probably true. And the question, Manton, is does the iPhone 4-inch represent, is it comparable to the 13-inch MacBook Pro, or is it comparable to that like beloved, what was it, 11-inch PowerBook?
12-inch
PowerBook. Yeah,
it was a weird number. Yeah,
yeah, the 12-inch PowerBook that Apple canceled.
Yeah,
and then never created again. And some people out there were like, "Well, this was too good. The 12-inch PowerBook was too good to never make again. Surely Apple will realize this is an important size. They're going to make another one of these. It's just a matter of time." And they waited and waited and waited, and they only got a 13-inch, and they got a MacBook Air, but none of them was a 12-inch.
Yeah.
And those people are still waiting. So the question for people who are in love with the iPhone 5 form factor, the 4-inch form factor, right? Is that like the 12-inch MacBook?
Yeah.
Some people are saying, "Hey, well, I'm still waiting for the iPhone 4 to come back." And I think it's pretty safe to say that's never coming back.
No, that never is. I felt like that for a while though.
Anyway, well, you know, we'll see how it feels. You know what's going to be interesting, Manton, is if they come out with an iPhone 4, or rather a 4-inch model again that's like super – got the new stuff, the NFC and the Touch ID and all that stuff I'm sure I'm going to get used to. It's going to be a great test of what my actual tastes are for me to then have to decide, do I want to keep the iPhone 6, the 4.7-inch size, or then at that point I almost say downgrade – sort of shows where my biases are going.
Well, I think, first of all, it's a great problem to have, right?
Yeah.
Choosing between two great phones. But I also think it will be very difficult to downgrade, not just because you're used to the bigger size now, but because downgrading too early will mean you are not upgrading at all. You know, like, for example, if my theory is correct,
right,
they rev on the off years. Like, if you upgraded to the 6C next year, it would probably be identical speed and camera as what you have now, right?
Right.
There would be no point. If you waited a few years and then you downgraded, it might be an upgrade. But so I think people that have the 4.7 now probably will stick with it.
Yeah. Well, there would be no point except that if it did work out that way, it would be a perfect test of wanting to change purely for the size.
Right.
And so, like, you know, I could envision looking at that new thing and saying, okay, well, the way this works out, I can actually sell my iPhone 6 for cash that pays for the, you know, the change to this newer, cheaper, you know, 4-inch model, presumably. Mm-hmm. And then I would be like, okay, do I make that call or not? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens, but I'm going to be curious now. I have to sort of admit that I'm wrong about this because it's only been 3 days, but I'm the disdain for the 4.7 inch size is fading so quickly that I fear I have to confess it's not as big of a deal to me as I thought it would be.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think I'm jealous of the new phone people, even though I don't want to get one because that is pretty awesome in several ways. The other thing about the upgrades I was just thinking about is we have to remember that, you know, we're talking about going from the 4-inch to the 4.7 or the 5.5. A lot of people will be going from the 3.5-inch still. 2 weeks ago, you could buy a 4S brand new. In fact, my mom just got an iPhone for the first time. And because of the worst timing possible, which I was not consulted on, she has a 4S that's brand new.
She can still return it. She can return it. It's a 14-day return policy.
Yeah, you know, she's not sure. She might, but she likes it. It's her first actual smartphone.
Oh, you gotta rescue her, Manton.
The problem is I'm the worst person to rescue her because I love the 4S. I thought it was great. So, you know, I told her the pros and cons. I don't know. She'll figure out what to do. But the point is, it's a brand new 4S under contract for 2 years. There are very few people. Maybe she's the last person to get the 4S off the assembly line. There's very few people like that, but they're at the very last minute. But there's a lot of people that have gotten a 4S sometime in the last year or two. And when their contract is up, they could jump to the bigger phones, or they could jump to the, you know, the 5C or the 5S. And that would also be a screen size upgrade. Yeah. So I don't know. There's a whole, we forget sometimes there's a whole range of people out there with different phones, and what makes sense for someone that got the 5S on day one and wants the 6 on day one may not make sense for millions of other people.
Well, that's a good way to look at it, Manton. And I guess we'll just have to settle on the fact that there are a variety of insanely good phones available to a wider group of people than ever before. And it's, you know, it's funny too. I was like, yeah, I was saying like, oh, I'm going to get rid of my iPhone 5. And it's like, talking about it like it's this old and busted thing, and it's still like this miracle of science that's impossible to believe exists. But yeah, kudos to Apple. Kudos to everybody, I guess, in the smartphone industry for pushing this forward. But, you know, I'm really – this is my first phone now, Manton, with the Touch ID. I got to say that thing is – it's working pretty well now. That's a nice thing.
Cool.
I'm excited to start tapping this thing on pay terminals next month. Mm-hmm. And I guess this is what qualifies as excitement in my sad little life.
You know, the Apple Pay thing, there may be something there. They're pushing that. We have, you know, our bank, like, they sent us an email about it saying, get ready. When I, you know, got some money out of the ATM machine last week, there was a screen on the ATM said, get ready, Apple Pay's coming. There may be something to this thing.
It's brilliant because I think everybody's caught up in the perception. It's kind of self-fulfilling prophecy right now. People make the assumption that if Apple gets behind something, it's going to succeed, right? And then they get the fear that if they don't get behind it with Apple, then they're going to fail. They're going to fall by the wayside. So you know, you think like Google did this like 3 or 4 years ago, right? They're like, hey, we're Google. Everybody loves us. Everybody uses Google. And now that we have credit card payment, you know, solutions, just use Google Pay. And everyone's like, meh, right? And but Apple does it. And they're like, oh no, Apple's doing it. We need to be on board. And I actually read this this article that I'll try to link to, talking about exactly what you're describing, which is the banks. Here's the explanation for that. It may be obvious to you, Manton, but it wasn't obvious to me. The banks are scrambling not just to support Apple Pay, but to convince their customers that among the different financial institutions and cards that they have, that that specific bank's credit card should be the one that's set as the default for Apple Pay, right? So if you're Bank of America – and you know you've got a customer with the Bank of America card, they may also have a Chase MasterCard, American Express card. And so they're looking at this now as the train is leaving the station. Apple Pay is going to take all of our customers down this road of glorious, like super fraud-resistant payments. But if that customer puts the competitor's credit card on first, then we're going to lose most of our charges. They have to. They have the challenge now of making customers, trying to make customers think, perhaps that their card is the only one among their cards that's going to work reliably with Apple Pay. They want to say like, we're ready for Apple Pay. These other bozos might not be ready, but trust us. When you get that Apple Pay and turn it on, just put your bank of the internet on there and ignore the other guys.
Apple must love this, right?
It's a beautiful thing. It's like watching a Game of Thrones or something when they come in and cut off all the heads. it's kind of a morbidly fascinating thing when I these days to watch Apple kind of step into an industry and just have everybody fawn over them. Well, that's my venting take on Apple Pay.
That sounds pretty accurate.
All right, this week, folks, we are brought to you once again by our excellent, excellent long-term sponsors, Crashlytics. And of course, you know what Crashlytics is. It's a brilliant framework. You download, drop it into Xcode with your projects, your iOS apps, your Mac apps. You build them, you ship them, and the next time your apps crash in the hands of your users, that information is sent up automatically to Crashlytics servers where you can browse all of your crashes in a beautiful web interface. Makes it really easy to zero in on what's going wrong in your apps, get a better idea of how many people it's affecting, whether it's affecting people on shipping releases of Apple software or on beta releases. All kinds of information in there, including analytics these days. Tons of great stuff. You can learn more, of course, at Crashlytics.com. Thank you, Crashlytics, for sponsoring Core Intuition.
Yeah, Crashlytics is great. I use it in my app Tweet Library. I use it in Sunlit, my other iPhone app. And, you know, I've talked before about how I love this crash-free, you know, kind of display where you, if you opt into the analytics, you can see what percentage of users are actually crashing. And that really drove me to, like, make sure I fixed all my bugs, right? Really make sure that most people, vast majority, do not have any crashes. And I made good progress on that a month or two ago. And last week I was working on Tweet Library and I noticed that there was still one bug that kept bubbling up in Crashlytics. So one of the things that Crashlytics does that's really smart is it kind of groups your crashes from like super high priority, really should fix this, to like, you know, the less common crashes that aren't affecting as many users. And there was one that was still bubbling up and didn't make any sense. And I had added some code in there to try to, you know, just add more checks for nil and like, is this what I think it is? And like, why is this crashing? And nothing fixed it. And I finally dove into Crashlytics last week, found the bug. It was really ridiculous. It was like a property that was set to assign instead of, you know, retain. Terrible. But it finally explained this kind of flaky crash that kept happening for a lot of users and something that I just very rarely saw myself. Anyway, thanks to Crashlytics, it kept reminding me that this bug was really there, and I was able to finally find it and get the fix out.
It reminds you, Manton, as politely as it can, that you're just not really that great at what you do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It went all the way except for hitting me in the face and telling me I didn't know how to program.
Well, you know, Crashlytics is a great sponsor of this show because we have so many iOS developers in general in our audience. And many of you probably be interested to know about, you know, Crashlytics, of course, is owned by Twitter. And Twitter is having a developer conference of their own coming up. You can learn more about that at twitterflight.com. And it looks like it's an arrangement where you apply to get an invitation to the conference. So I don't know exactly what the criteria are, but the conference is coming up in October, I think October 22nd. And it should be an exciting, educational, fun, social, et cetera, event in San Francisco. So check it out, twitterflight.com. And of course, the main page for Crashlytics, crashlytics.com. And take a minute, if you appreciate Crashlytics sponsoring the show, to let them know at Crashlytics on Twitter. Thanks again for sponsoring us. And folks, get out there and make sure as many of your bugs or your crashes are fixed as quickly as possible.
Okay, speaking of updating my app with bug fixes, I took this opportunity when I was fixing bugs and to update Tweet Library with a couple improvements, including finally support for the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus screen sizes. I was kind of late to the game on this. When the phone shipped, I realized, yeah, I probably should ship an update for them. And so I don't have one of the phones yet, so I've been testing the simulator with Xcode 6, and which has been great, actually. I've had very few problems with Xcode 6 so far. I've had a couple little crashes, but in terms of testing the simulator, different screen sizes, it's been working great. And it was fairly simple for me to update Tweet Library. It's already universal, and all I wanted to do was make sure when you're launching on the 6 and 6 Plus, you know, it natively understands the resolution, things work. My first reaction was, I will also, if you're in landscape on the 6 Plus, do a split view like I do on the iPad. And I was like, how hard that could be? I'm already universal. I already support that on the iPad. Turns out, because of the weird, clever way some of my code is organized for the split view, it was non-trivial, so I didn't ship that yet. But I did update at least for the new phone sizes, and looks pretty great, I think, at least in the simulator.
Yeah, now this is one of those situations, right, Manton, where you opt in to basically being rendered as you should be on the device by simply having a launch screen of the appropriate resolution. Is that right?
That's right, and it turns out they have a new thing in iOS 8 where you can, instead of a launch screen image, you can use a nib file, and that allows you to use auto layout or whatever you want. And it doesn't load, you know, it's not complex. It's basically a static thing, but it's still just one file that can resize and that is used at launch time. And so I use that, and pretty cool idea. I'm really glad. It doesn't work on older versions of the OS, but it makes things a lot easier going forward to support multiple sizes. So you don't need, like, you know, a bunch of different launch images for all the different phones.
Yeah, that's really cool that you can do it so easily. But what's not so cool is it still requires a rebuild, right? So now we have this situation where hundreds or thousands of apps that look great on an iPhone 5, you open them up on an iPhone 6 and they look a little blurry, a little fuzzy. And it's kind of funny when you first see one of those apps, it's kind of like, the way I see it is, I know this phone has a beautiful, beautiful display, but I see this app that has a kind of vaguely fuzzy look. And I think this is probably what, like, a real cheap Android phone looks like all the time. But it's a shame, because Apple wants this thing to shine, literally. They want it to shine with crisp, beautiful, well-designed apps, both from Apple and from third-party developers. But of course, nobody knew that they needed to add, you know, if you could have just guessed, like, I wonder, maybe I should just proactively put a launch screen for this dimension, just in case Apple comes out with something that matches that, then you would have, you know, assuming your app was designed to be adaptive to many different layouts, it would just look beautiful from day one. But nobody, of course, had that privilege. And so now you got all these great apps. I use apps like Twitterific. As you know, Twitterific, the Icon Factory, is a company of designers and developers who would sweat the details of making this look good if they had the opportunity, right? And so I'm looking at Twitterific and it's fuzzy. And I'm thinking, like, they don't want this to look this way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you learn about it on Friday or whatever. You learn about it on, what was it, like a week before they shipped, a week and a half before. And then you got to get your changes done. You got to put it into app review. Of course, 95% of the rest of the iOS developers in the world are also doing that. And so then there's no apps ready. And this is the situation with you too, right? You're waiting for review.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it looks like review times are up a little bit, which I guess makes sense with the new phone shipping. But the iOS review times site shows, I think, 9 days, which is a little bit longer than what you're used to. So yeah, this may not. I submitted it, I think, Friday night. It may not be, you know, recording Tuesday. It's still waiting, maybe several more days at the minimum before it's out. So bummer for my users. I think the good news is, this little dance with the launch files, I think we're done with that. I think this is the last one. I think that especially if you can use a nib or zib or whatever that resizes appropriately, I think in the future, if they introduce other sizes, things will automatically work. I don't think we're going to have to, like, you know what I mean? It's like, this was the transition.
You think they'll have confidence in developers to do the right thing. And so if your app doesn't behave well, you won't have the privilege of just looking fuzzy. You will just look however wrong you look when you fail to adapt to the new layout.
This was the opportunity to get developers on board thinking about different sizes. And next year, if they introduce a 5.2-inch phone, I don't know, something crazy they're not going to do, but it's not going to be opt-in. You're going to run at the right resolution right off the bat, because this was your chance to get it right, right? Right. If you ship a phone, an app that works on the 3.5-inch, 4-inch, 4.7-inch, and 5.5-inch, and your app doesn't work on a weird size that's not exactly that, you've done something wrong, right? Your app should not be hard-coded to 4 screen sizes today.
Right.
So I think the opt-in part, I think we're hopefully done with that, and apps, you know, there may never be a new screen size, but if there is, I think apps hopefully will just natively work at that size without this little dance that you have to go through.
Well, see, it's frustrating for the developers who have put in the work to be ready for that now. And they would have, what would have been, I think, best would have been if Apple had, previous to this launch, said, hey, we know that we've had a lot of different phone sizes come out. We'll probably have different phone sizes come out in the future. So if you are a developer who is confident about your ability to adapt to phone sizes, then set this flag that says, LS, I am not a bozo. Bool. True. Yeah. And then the payoff of that was, it would still be a proactive thing that developers would have to do, akin to making a new resolution size, you know, launch image. But a bunch of people like Icon Factory, Tweetbot, all these folks, they would have had this stuff set and ready to run, and their apps would be sharp on my phone today. And that would have been, you know, it's easy to gripe about little things Apple does wrong, but that would have been a better launch. That would have been nicer to developers. It would have been better for users. And to be honest, Manton, like, I have good enough eyes that if I didn't know the technical details of why these apps look fuzzy, there's a chance I would take this phone back to Apple and say, say that the display is fuzzy. Like, why is this display fuzzy? Right. Why, you know, it's for some reason when I use Safari, it's sharp, but when I use Twitterific, it's fuzzy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's a support issue for them. And they got to say, well, don't worry. Explain, yada, yada, yada. If you're lucky enough that the genius even is tuned into this, right? I don't know. It's just a little minor flaw in the launch of the iPhone 6. They could have made this a lot smoother, I think, and with a little bit of forethought. I hope you're right that in the future it will just be given that developers are expected to make their apps behave well on new devices. Short of that, though, like, for instance, it would have been kind of cool if there was something something like, you know, iPhones are already doing stuff like checking with the App Store for updates. So there could be like an iTunes Connect flag that developers could set, say, hey, cool. I've tested this. Mine looks good. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, that's actually, that would be a really nice way to handle it. Not having to submit a whole new build. Just, yeah, that would be nice. And, you know, they probably should have taken care of this in the first screen transition. But yeah. I can also see an argument to say, well, we kind of need iOS 7 transition before because there's so many apps that were designed that just, you know, you have this huge crazy texture background that doesn't scale well. And it's almost like they needed to do these kind of baby steps, but we're past it. I think we can move on. That's true, though. It would have been nice if there was just a flag in iTunes Connect.
Yeah.
You mentioned the fuzziness. And it's difficult for me to see some of this in the iPhone simulator, of course, although I can see the sort of the obvious size changes. But think about the people that have the super big iPhone 6 Plus, right? Though I think that would be even more noticeable because it's not a fuzziness issue. It's I'm not actually using the screen well issue, right? It's like you actually have significant more screen that you can use. Yeah. And if it's just scaled up, you really are not taking advantage of the screen at all.
It's true. And I guess, you know, though, stepping back a minute, as bad as it looks to, you know, to have the new iPhone 6, the fancy, fancy new iPhone 6, to have fuzzy apps on it, I'm sure Apple made the calculation there. Like, well, what's worse, having fuzzy apps or having apps that suddenly break so that they can't even be used when you update to a new phone? And in that analysis, I can totally relate to Apple making the call that, okay, let's just play it safe and let the developers update and submit. But it's just a drag for everybody that we have this like at the peak of excitement over iPhone 6 and its screens and its beauty and its performance to have this first few weeks of it be marred by sort of like lackluster UI from some of these apps.
Yeah, it's true. I would be a little disappointed if I had one of the new phones and like half my apps weren't ready yet, but we'll get through it. Yeah. But it is something that like they even mentioned, I saw the Verge video review of the 6 Plus and they even mentioned in the review, like, you know, a lot of my apps they don't look great yet, but developers will get on board pretty soon. So it's kind of a temporary issue.
On the scale of things to be anguished about in the world, yeah, pretty low, actually.
Right. Yeah, but, you know, it's a good opportunity to rev your app. If you haven't yet, you should probably be doing that now. And, hey, maybe you can sneak in a couple bug fixes at the same time like I did. It was nice to, I bumped Tweet Library to version 2.6, like kind of like a minor update, not just a small bug fix. And every time I do a version number like that, I try to justify it and include a few changes. Yeah. I actually dropped support for iOS 5 and 6 as well. And so it's 7 up. That also allowed me to just like remove a whole bunch of old code that has more modern, you know, APIs. And it, like actually iOS 8, one of the things that I did is iOS 8 is huge kind of game changing thing for developers, obviously. And one of the things is extensions. And in Tweet Library, I had all this old code for like sharing to Instapaper and Pinboard and Pocket and like all this stuff. I mean, it's a Twitter app. Like, why do I have all this complicated code for managing passwords and stuff just to save like a URL for a web page you're viewing in my app? It's kind of pointless. So I ripped all that out. And now on iOS 8, of course, you can use extensions. And I use the normal system share sheet for that stuff. And I think it was just a nice opportunity to sort of clean up some of the old cruft and get with the times, kind of.
Yeah, that's always great when you can take one complex subsystem out of your app and just leave it to Apple. They may not get it perfect, but at least they will do it all for you. Were there any services, though, that you had to drop because they don't have an extension or...
So I didn't, to be honest, it was kind of a gut feeling that I made this decision without doing probably quite enough research. And one of the downsides to what I did is that it actually is kind of a step back for iOS 7 users because I do require iOS 8 now to share with like Instapaper or something. Mm-hmm. We'll see. Well, maybe I'll hear from customers. But my feeling was this was a very minor part of what Tweet Library did. Like, no one was buying it because they could save to Instapaper. It was just a bonus. And so it's a little bit of a step back for iOS 7 people, but it's a huge step forward for iOS 8 because it greatly expands the sharing services, right? It's like I had, like I said, you know, Pinboard, Instapaper, and this kind of stuff baked in, but I can't bake in every crazy feature. And with iOS 8, it's the user has complete control over what they want to share with. It just makes a lot more sense. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'll hear from customers whether it's great or not, but I think it's a big improvement.
Well, I guess that's one of the things, one of the tough decisions you have to make on the app stores is where do you diminish behavior for older systems versus just outright cutting them off? Because if you had just cut off those iOS 7 users, there wouldn't be any real debate about it. I mean, they're cut off for the future for improvements, but you haven't taken anything away then. They would just be stuck on that older version forever. And now, of course, the problem is they can't go back to that older version if they update, right?
Exactly. The other thing I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think every iOS 7 user can upgrade to iOS 8.
Oh, that may be true. Yeah.
And that helped me justify like kind of just pushing them all forward. It was kind of crazy for me up until 2 weeks ago to still supporting iOS 5.
Yeah.
And you know, I did that because I really didn't want to drop support for the first iPad. Some of my very first customers were on the iPad 1. I wanted to support them as long as possible. But I felt I had reached a point with kind of maturity of the app, and it's been so long that it was finally time to sort of to move past those users. And, you know, if you look at my stats in Crashlytics, when I look at the analytics thing, I mean, no one is using 5 and 6, right? Very, very rarely someone will pop up. Almost everybody is on iOS 7 and 8 now.
And the people who are using it are like people who, for whom it's like, oh, my original iPad is my like beater iPad that I keep in the car or I have with me at the beach house or something. And it's not like, you might be inconveniencing them, but it's not like they don't have a relationship with newer devices.
Hope so.
Eventually you do just have to move on. It's like, okay, well, it's the classic software, balance that we have to weigh what we can achieve by embracing new stuff and leaving the old stuff behind. And often what you can achieve is so much greater moving forward that you have to chalk it up to losing some things for the older releases.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening to the show this week. Thanks to our sponsor, Crashlytics. As always, check out the jobs board too, jobs.corent.org. Some great listings there, or post a new listing if you're looking to hire a Mac or iOS developer.
Yeah, we've had some good new jobs up there. So if you haven't checked it out in a while, definitely take a look. There's even some contract and I think remote friendly stuff, which is something people ask for frequently. Jobs.corent.org. And yes, as Manton said, thank you once again, Crashlytics, for sponsoring the show. Folks, one of the things you can do, as Manton said, you maybe sneak a few bug fixes in when you update your iOS app for iOS 6 support, or maybe it's the first time you actually drop the Crashlytics framework in there and put yourself to the test to see how reliable your software is behaving out there in the field. Thanks a lot for listening, and Manton, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you.